This is Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. Tonight I'll share with you the conversation I had earlier today with the director of the Kalamazoo Concert Band, which performs Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in Chanery Auditorium. He joined me at 10 in the morning on a snow day. My intrepid musical guest has made it through the storm and snow and would love to spend the hour here to talk about the Kalamazoo Concert Band's program on Saturday. I'm talking about Dr. Tom Evans. Thanks for coming in today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And the roads weren't too bad, I might add. I mean, the 131 was actually pretty clear, and so was Stadium Drive. So kudos to the road crew. They did a nice job.
Well, great. That's nice to hear. But don't all hit the road at once,
folks.
Oh,
no, I'd agree with that.
So the next concert is called a Renaissance Fair, and
yes,
you've brought together some amazing pieces that were based in the Renaissance. Not a time period I would necessarily want to go back and live in.
Yes.
But the art that was created.
Yes.
Incredible.
Well, as some may recall, that was, you know, the Black Plague had just run its course just maybe 100 years before the Renaissance actually took foothold in the 1400s. I think it would be an exciting time, actually. It's certainly in Florence. I mean, that was a real hotbed of artistic activity. I mean, there's certainly in the visual arts. Yeah.
If you could choose where to observe the Renaissance from.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That's a good point indeed. Yeah, so putting together this program was a little, when I first came up with the idea, well, maybe I should back up just a little bit and share with you how this program came to be. So when I sit down to do programming a year in advance or a year and a half in advance, one of the first things I do is look at anniversary dates. And as many people know, this is the 400th anniversary of the death of Shakespeare. April, April something in 15. Anyway, so it's been 400 years. So I thought, well, that's kind of cool. That's kind of he's a major player. So I thought, people know him. But then I thought, well, maybe all Shakespeare might be a little much. And then it was actually difficult to find concert band music inspired by the works of Shakespeare. There are a few, but some of them tend to be a little esoteric. So then I thought, okay, well, but I like the idea. So I thought, well, the Renaissance. Then I thought Renaissance Fair. That seems like a fun thing to do in February because, if you look out your window right now, it's like, we need something fun. So I thought, well, so we'll do Renaissance Fair. And then I discovered, once I decided to program this, and I went to find some more music. After I found a few pieces like the William Byrd Suite and Don's Array, then I thought, well, I set out to find other works that would fit the theme. And then I have to be honest, if for most audience members, if they sat and listened to an hour's worth of Renaissance music, they would think, well, I guess it all starts to sound a little the same. So then I thought, well, I'll just find music that was inspired from the Renaissance. And that's what I've done. So basically what we do have, by and large, is 20th century music that was inspired by the Renaissance.
That sounds like a fun trip to go on as you plan this
yeah.
program. And we've talked in the past about the incredible proliferation of wind band music
yes.
in the 20th century and 21st century, and it continues to blossom and grow. So I've asked you in the past, like, do you ramble through libraries? And I think you said yes to that, but
yes.
you also talk to colleagues and just chat about...
Yes. This is a wonderful network of band directors across the country, and we have both online and conventions, and we ask each other, what are you programming? And they're inevitably someone will say, oh, I found this piece, and you have to program this sometime soon. And then we go and listen to it if we can, and then lo and behold, it's a fantastic piece, and it goes like wildfire throughout the entire community. And before you know it, if it's a good piece, it'll be programmed quite often within a few years by several bands across the nation.
I want to ask if the experience with, Dr. Philip Jones?
Yes, Graham Jones.
Graham Jones.
Dr. Graham Jones, yes.
Right, I'm thinking of another brass
yes.
player.
Yeah, yeah, Philip Jones Brass Ensemble, also out of England. Yeah, it's a fine ensemble.
But was that visit from this musician and leader of the Black Watch Band?
Yes.
Was that a... fun, transformative?
It was electric. It was magic. It was a wonderful experience for the band and for myself to watch him work with the band and all. And as you well know, and if your audience remembers, he's quite the storyteller.
It was one of my favorite interviews.
He's never at a loss for words, and his stories are quite interesting, quite fascinating. And he's what a pleasant gentleman and a fine musician. So yeah, it was a magical moment for all of us. And if anyone recalls or would like to know what the performance was like, it was magical. It was electric.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sure it was.
Yeah, it was great.
A man who had to perform in front of the Queen for 15 years or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, indeed.
Knows from pressure.
Yes.
And at this point in his life can really just enjoy, you know, working with groups around the world.
Indeed. And you know, so now, you know, with social media today, we're Facebook friends, of course. And I saw him following him quite regularly, and, you know, because he makes all these posts, and he's still traveling both in the United States and in Europe, conducting concerts. So he's still out there doing it.
Well, it's a great example of the vibrant musical life of Kalamazoo. And the Kalamazoo Concert Band has been a part of it for 30
No,
some?
We celebrated our 50th anniversary about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. So
goodness
we're
gracious.
We're into our next 50 years. Yes.
Well, I also wanted to let you know I got acquainted with some great brass members of your group. In fact, had them on the radio.
Yes.
Fritz McDonald.
Oh, yeah, great
Mike
guys.
McMinn.
Yeah. John Dickey, Chris Garrett, and who am I leaving out? Oh, Roger Lynch.
They came in and had a great time here in the station, and so nice to have the Kalamazoo Concert Band represented that way too.
Yeah, the brass. She's referring to the brass rail, and it's a brass quintet that actually it was the brainchild of Mike McMinn, the lead trumpet player, and he just wanted to put together music just for fun. And I think he's actually done that. They play at local bars. I mean, if you can imagine, maybe your audience members can't imagine this, but it actually works. He has put together this brass quintet, and they go to play at local bars. And then also Judy Sarkozy's Bakery for Art Hop. It's just fun music, and they have a great time doing it. And it's quite unique and wonderful. But yeah, and they all of them are members of the Kalamazoo Concert Band, and it just shows you the breadth and depth of the concert band and the art community here in Kalamazoo.
Well, let's take a break for some music and come back with more description and talk about a Renaissance Fair from the Kalamazoo Concert Band. Details of the concert are this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Chenery Auditorium in downtown Kalamazoo, corner of Vine and Westnich.
And it's free.
And it's free and open to the public, which
free
is...
Free parking, free admission. Now, some people might recall when we have our December concert that we require tickets. That's for crowd control. Those annual events are huge, and we typically fill Miller Auditorium with 3,400 people. So we issue tickets for crowd control. But this concert here is in Chenery, there's ample seating for everybody, so please just come down. You do not need a ticket. It's free, but we hope to fill it, 2,000. Some people would be great to fill it, and they should hear us. But anyways, just so you know, it's this Saturday, 7:30, and it's free parking, free admission, no ticket necessary.
Here's one of the iconic pieces of Renaissance band music. It's from Gordon Jacobs' William Byrd Suite, and we'll hear the Earl of Oxford's March. Oh, we are loving this Earl of Oxford's March.
It's wonderful stuff. From it's the just William so Birds. Elegant, so grand. It's so British.
This has the feeling of something, yeah, grand, an entrance music. What can you tell me about William Byrd and how he worked in his world of the Renaissance?
Well, this is interesting. Actually, what I'd like to share is that in my research, this piece is based, this particular movement from the William Byrd suite is the Earl of Oxford March. William Byrd uses a device called a tucket, and which I hadn't heard of before, but a tucket, apparently, in the Renaissance, was a snippet of music. It served as a musical signature for royalty and nobility and people of distinction. So apparently back then people had a little signature musical lick,
fanfare
of sort. So William Byrd was in association with the Earl of Oxford. He wasn't under his employ, but he knew of him. And so anyways, and actually he did receive some commissions from him and some support, financial support. So he wrote this work, the Earl of Oxford March, for the Earl of Oxford, and it has this military feel to it. But scholarship is kind of unclear about this. I'm not sure if the Earl of Oxford actually did participate in any military engagements. But William Byrd, knowing, you know, which side his bread was buttered on, decided to write this grand entrance march using William Byrd's or the Earl of Oxford's tucket and trying to make it more like a military procession, if you will. And so I'm sure that William Byrd was rewarded quite handsomely for that.
I imagine, you know, in great big gatherings where, say, there are, you're hosting a royal party, it's almost easier to hear a musical tag associated with a person to know who's just arrived.
Well, that's exactly how it was used. It was used as an announcement. So when the Earl of Oxford, for example, would show up at a soiree, the little musicians tucked all the way on the corner would play this little snippet of music to announce the Earl of Oxford.
And that's called a tucket.
Yeah, a tucket. I didn't know that until I did my research on this.
Well, I've learned something today.
Yeah, kind of interesting.
You know, this piece comes fourth in the program.
Yes.
So maybe we should back up and you could take us through the first part of the program.
Well, the first half, we begin with A Journey to the Lion's Castle by Rosano Galante. Some people may not know him, but he is a film composer, and so his music has a real cinematic quality. And I thought, what a great way to start our concert with this really exceptional piece of music that, for lack of a better term, sounds cinematic. So you can imagine you're sitting down at the movie theater with your box of popcorn, and you're going to expect something dazzling to happen. And that's exactly what this music captures, is a real dazzling quality. And even though castles aren't, castles kind of went by the wayside by the beginning of the Renaissance, but they were still used, which is why I have it in the program. So most people associate castles with the medieval time period, which is accurate. But then, as we all know, with the advent of the of cannons and whatnot, that kind of rendered castles useless. But they were still used well into the Renaissance as a place to hold markets and fairs and whatnot, and still a place to, you know, for gatherings, social gatherings, what have you. So it's still the centerpiece of society back then. So I thought it's a good way to start the program. We'll just make a journey to the village castle and go to the Renaissance fair. Then we did, next up is the Procession of the Nobles. And this is a mainstay in the wind band repertoire. It comes from the opera Melada. It's by Nicholas Rimsky-Korsakov. I love opera, but I hope I'm not stating this incorrectly, but I don't think Melada is on the one of the top 10 operas. So I think it's kind of I'm not sure how obscure it is, but it's certainly not on the top 10. However, this Procession of the Nobles is extracted from that, and it gets a lot of airplay, certainly in the band world, because it's a magnificent piece of music. So we're kind of imagining this Procession of Nobles here back in the Renaissance time. And then, of course, we have the perennial Greensleeves. How can you do a Renaissance concert without Greensleeves? And our assistant conductor, Brian Shetterly, is going to conduct that. And it's a wonderful arrangement by Alfred Reed, and it's just a lush, rich arrangement, and the audience certainly knows Greensleeves.
And today we associate it with Christmas time.
Yeah, we have. I think it came around in the 1800s. They use the same melody. They changed the words to "What child is this?" So that's the same tune.
But back then, in the Renaissance era, this was just a common pop tune.
Oh, you may not know this, but maybe some people do. Some people think that perhaps King Henry VIII wrote this piece.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really interesting because he was a musician. He was a lute player. He played the virginal, which is a forerunner of today's keyboards. So he had some chops, you know, as a musician. But that, in truth be told, that was expected of people of nobility or in royal classes. They were expected to if they didn't have musical abilities, they were expected at least to have artistic abilities like painting. I mean, that was just expected along with being educated and speaking several languages. Playing an instrument was almost required. So he was a musician, and so some people think that he may have written it. But if you do a little further research, you'll discover that the scholars are more willing to admit that he may have written the lyrics, but probably not the tune. Hmm. And it's actually as these letters that he had written to Anne Boleyn, one of his wives, as you recall.
Oh,
yeah. So they think there's some credibility there. It's a little thin, but there could be a line there. So there is a possibility that King Henry VIII wrote Greensleeves, at least the lyrics. So and then we're doing the as we just heard, the Earl of Oxford's March, and then we're going to finish that the last half or the first half. The last tune for the first half is The Bells, also from William Byrd's suite. And we should talk about Dr. Robert Spradlin now.
That's right. I was just about to jump in and say you've invited a special guest conductor.
Yes, yes. So I'm sure that many of your audience members know who Dr. Robert Spradlin is. He's a retired director of bands and professor of music at Western Michigan University. He's been retired for, what, 2-3 years maybe?
It seems like a short amount of time.
Yeah,
but I still
maybe
see.
Longer. I don't know. But life goes by so quickly, I'm not sure. But just recently retired. And he has graciously agreed to serve as our guest conductor. And he will conduct The Earl of Oxford's March and The Bells.
So the music we just heard and another piece from the William Byrd Suite. Let's hear The Bells from the William Byrd Suite. I'm with Tom Evans. He's conducting the Kalamazoo Concert Band at 7:30 in a free program at Chenery Auditorium. Enjoying a Renaissance morning here with Dr. Tom Evans, who is conducting the Kalamazoo Concert Band.
Oh, that's great music. When is that concert? I want to go.
It's Saturday, actually.
Oh.
I hope you're there.
Yes,
7:30 p.m. And it is free and open to the public. And you've invited Dr. Robert Spradlin to conduct the two pieces from the William Byrd Suite by Gordon Jacob. These really are cornerstone pieces for wind band?
Yes, they are. Yeah, they're mainstay. Absolutely. Yeah. So we're thrilled to have Dr. Spradlin come in and share his musical expertise with the band.
And the band itself is in wonderful shape after 50-some years.
Yes.
And it's always nice to invite a guest conductor to just share something a little different.
Yes. When I mentioned when I asked Bob to conduct, he was excited about it. Of course, he knows about the Kalamazoo Concert Band, was jumped at the opportunity to serve as a guest conductor, which is flattering. I mean, you know, you could say, you know, I mean, it's possible. You know, someone could say, well, you know, look at my calendar, I'm kind of busy. But, you know, he was so excited to do this, and we're so excited to have him. So, you know, the Kalamazoo Concert Band is a true gem in our community. Sometimes I have to wonder if the fact that we have free concerts might seem like we're not, I don't know, have the same validity as maybe a venue that we get to pay money to go see. But this is because of the generous support of our patrons and certainly people like the Gilmore Foundation and others, the Arts Council of Kalamazoo, and there are others, Fetzer Center. These folks, you know, through their generous contributions, allow us to give free concerts. In fact, they say, we will give you money so that you can provide free concerts for the community. So that's what we do. We give free concerts. And we're quite good. Actually, we're very good. I'm pleased to say that we've applied for a performing opportunity at the Midwest Clinic in Chicago, which is an annual event we go on for, I think this coming year might be the 75th. It attracts well over 10,000 musicians around the country and the world, indeed. To be recognized and to perform there is quite an honor. And the Kalamazoo Concert Band did appear there in the 80s. Under Richard Swinsick. It's high time we get back here and do it again. So we're hopeful, we're very hopeful that we'll be accepted this year.
I think one of the most attractive things about the Kalamazoo Concert Band is your programming, actually.
Oh, thank you.
You really do bring a lot of fun to the concert hall and brilliance. This bouquet of pieces from the Renaissance will really showcase all kinds of things about a wind band and stay lively. I mean, yes. You might think going to a wind band concert would you might want to think an hour and a half would be a long time, but it'll fly by.
Yeah, well, this does fly by. Yeah, I work really hard at the programming, and I try to break the traditional mold of, you know, have a march followed by, you know, an overture, and then that's an orchestral transcription, and then you'd bring out a guest artist to do a concerto or something, and then, you know, you do another march, and then, you know, do a musical. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that kind of programming, but can I share something with you? You know, I remember very clearly back in the 60s when I was growing up as a young teenager that there came out this idea of concept albums. Like, remember when with the Beatles with the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band?
Of course.
And people were hailing this because, oh, look, it's a concept album. It's all tied together. It's all like, it's not just song to song to song, but it's actually all tied together and unified somehow. And so that has always stuck with me. So when I do my programming, I think about how can I tie it all together to make it a unified whole. And I spend days putting this stuff together. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 14, 16 hours, days, you know, researching and just thinking about how this works. And even how that whole thing ebbs and flows. So one goes into the next. So we start off with usually rousing music, and we keep it there for a little bit. Then we bring it down, then we bring it back up. We take it down, we bring it back up. And we always end with something that's you know, yee-hoo. So it's fun to do. It really is fun. And the band, oh my goodness, the Kalamazoo Concert Band can bring it. They can really bring it.
They get very excited about these.
They do.
Well, speaking of rousing ending pieces, I am going to break your ordered program and ask that we single out the last piece on program, because this was a new arrangement for me, a new setting of a famous English song, the Scarborough Fair, that I thought was just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's certainly a new spin on it. It's rousing. You feel like you've had a blood transfusion when you get done listening to this, or you feel like going out and doing backward somersaults in the yard.
It's hard to find this on record. In fact, I only found this as part of a live recording of a wind band conference, and this was an all-state band performing this transcription. So I would think that to hear it live on Saturday night would be the way to hear it.
Oh,
very
I agree.
Memorable. We'll be right back. We heard a live recording from the Pennsylvania Music Educators Association.
Oh, PMEA.
Yes.
I'm from Pennsylvania.
That's the Allstate Band.
Oh, fantastic.
Playing this incredible setting of Scarborough Fair.
Isn't it exciting? Oh, I'm like dancing around the studio here. Woo!
Can I bottle your excitement? That I could use it from a day to day.
Well, I think the band, when appropriate, actually channels my energy, and certainly they channel my energy for this piece, and this is how we end the concert. So, and you got to hear this live. You hear that percussion going through your body, boom, boom, boom. Oh my goodness, yes.
I just read that there's a study that shows people who are really into heavy metal music also love live classical and going to big concerts like this, because you get the same visceral sense.
It is a visceral experience, absolutely. You get to not only hear it, but you can feel it. And that's the beauty of going to a live performance, right? Plus, but seeing it is also exciting to see how the musicians gather their energy and
it
and
is.
Perform.
It's very exciting to actually watch the conductor and to watch the players as they attack their parts.
Yeah. And, it's something audiences may not be aware of, but without them, we have a name for that. If they don't show up at a concert, we call it a rehearsal. If the audience doesn't show up, it's called a rehearsal. So we need the audience. I mean, because any ensemble or any performing arts, whether it's dance, theater, or music, they feed off the energy of the audience as well. So it's a complete circuit. And so, we need each other. So you got to come and hear this concert.
It makes all the difference.
Yeah, it
certainly
does.
Earlier this morning, we were listening to Gordon Evans talking about ways that our community is coming together to address the senseless, horrific thing that happened last weekend. And it does make me appreciate even more the cooperation our arts organizations have amongst themselves that make Kalamazoo such a special community and place.
It is a special community, and it's so easy. And I understand that how these tragedies can put us into a tailspin of despair, and I think we all need to process it absolutely, and reflect on it, and then certainly take action on it. So try to prevent this in the future. But I think it's important also to not lose sight of the beauty that's around us, and music can certainly is one of those beautiful moments, and so by coming to this concert, hopefully we can as a community be lifted by this. And there is a moment in the program that I do make mention of this horrific tragedy, and it's when we do a Fantasia on the theme by Thomas Tallis, and we take a moment to pause and to recall this terrible moment. I placed in the script that basically it's we can see it as a requiem for the community, but also as a song of hope for the future. So I think it can serve as both. And I think music has that power to heal.
This is a piece that is originally for straight strings, the Fantasia on a theme of Thomas Tallis.
Yes.
That's the only way I've ever heard it.
It's a wonderful arrangement of it. It is. It's a wonderful arrangement. Purists might, scoff at this, but, it's only written for strings. How could it be transcribed for band or for wind instruments? But it works beautifully. It really does. And it's still a powerful piece of music, regardless of how it's rendered.
To take a piece for strings, which has a very uniform sound, I see more possibility when you add the colors of wind instruments and things you may never have heard before.
I agree with that, because the string instruments all belong to the same family. A violin is the same shape and material as a string bass. The only thing different is the size. But when you deal with the wind, so if you have a string, just strings playing, you have a uniformity of sound, which is beautiful, no doubt about it. But if you transcribe a piece for strings for a wind band, then you get additional colors to draw from. You have the flute family, the clarinet family, the saxophone family, all the cornet family, trumpet family, the trombones, they have all their associated instruments.
Does this piece go back and forth a bit between large ensemble and small?
It does, yeah. In fact, we work quite a bit on this for this whole program. There are times when we have just a small ensemble to try to capture that true Renaissance sound, and then we bring in the whole ensemble. So the audience will hear both chamber-like settings as well as full ensembles.
What can you tell me about Renaissance instruments and their modern-day counterparts?
Well, I can tell you about the trombone, certainly, because that's my instrument. Well, the trombone, I think it was... I think its birth is around the Renaissance time period, and it's the only instrument in the orchestra that has not undergone any radical transformation. It's basically the same instrument. You know, the only thing that's actually has been changed on the trombone is that the bell has gotten larger and the bore has gotten larger, so it's gotten a little bigger, and they've added a spit valve. That's about it. I mean, if I went back into the 1400s, I could rock the trombone. Now, of course, they also in the 20th century added the F attachment. But if you take off the F attachment and have it just as a straight trombone, it hasn't undergone any change at all since the 1400s.
It's always had a slide.
It's because it's perfect. It's a perfect instrument. You can't improve upon perfection.
So they weren't ever. Were they? They've always been metal as well.
Yeah, yeah. The funny thing is, they had these other devices. I can't show you visually, so the audience can't see this. But there were other devices where the brass would slide back and forth without any curvature. So it was a straight lined instrument. The trouble with that, those instruments were, you can imagine if it was if you slide and sing back and forth in a straight pipe, if you will, and then if you lose control of it and come up and hit yourself in the mouth, that would be pretty painful, I'm sure. So it took to around the 1400s for the instrument makers to be able to bend brass, because if you bend brass, you typically it would crimp, and you couldn't blow air through it. So around the 1400s, they were able to figure out the technique on how to bend brass. So then we get the trombone.
Well, what a wonderful ancient and modern instrument.
It is, yeah, indeed.
There.
Are you going to play the piece from Dante the Fagot for the bassoon quartet?
Oh, I would. Yes, I have that right here.
Because the bassoon was around in the Renaissance, and it's in the Dante, we have a moment where we bring out four bassoons. And this is what I want to say here. This shows you the depth of the Kalamazoo Contraband. Most community bands are lucky if they have one strong bassoon player. If they have two, oh my goodness. Well, the Kalamazoo Contraband doesn't only have four. We actually have five outstanding bassoon players, but we can only feature four of them. So there'll be four with one in the wings waiting just in case someone can't make it into the gig, right? So we have four four bassoon players playing this one piece at the concert. And it's Can you play, is it possible for you to play that?
I sure can.
Because it's only a minute and a half, and it's a wonderful color. Talk about because we've been talking about colors. Listen to the color of just a quartet of bassoons.
You know, you said a minute and a half, and I have 5 minutes on this piece.
Oh,
so it might be the wrong piece.
Oh, okay,
I'm
perhaps
not.
Sure. You know what? It segues right into the next movement. So
okay.
We can fade it out.
Okay, let's see what we get.
Let's see if we get. We can fade it maybe after a minute and a half.
Well, Dr. Evans, we missed our bassoon moment.
We did, but that's okay. We're still playing that at the concert, so that was still a wonderful opportunity, and it's still great music. So
sure
that
is.
Means all the more reason to come here live at Chenery Auditorium this Saturday at 7:30.
And it's free and open to the public.
It is. And to hear, how often have you gone and heard a bassoon quartet in a concert?
Very rare.
Yeah, it's very rare. It's a great sound. Oh, my goodness. What do you hear it? Oh, it's fantastic. It really is. You got to hear it.
When you conduct, are you able to actually enjoy the music as
well? Oh, you kidding me? Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, absolutely. Those are great moments for me. So half of you is just relishing in the beautiful sound that you're enveloped in, and the other half is hyper alert for like, oh my goodness, do I have to put out a fire soon?
Right, staying on task.
Yeah, because anything could happen at any moment, and that's the beauty of conducting. That's one of the things that draws me to conducting is in live performances is that. Is anything can happen, and how to resolve that, you know, while you're on the fly, which is exciting. I mean, some people might find that terrorizing, but it's exciting to me. I love it.
Yeah.
So, and that's one of the reasons why I enjoy conducting musicals and those sort of things, because anything can happen at any moment.
Okay, so you have a wide breadth of experience in conducting different kinds of ensembles.
Yeah.
Is wind band different than other kinds?
No, yeah, I don't think so. No, here's an interesting response. I teach jazz and have taught jazz for decades, and I have never had any training in jazz, none. But so I remember the very first time when I was handed a jazz band to conduct, and I went, oh my goodness, I'm going to conduct a jazz band. I don't know how to do this. I had never had any jazz training. I've played a few times in big bands and whatnot. But then I thought, well, Tom, it's the same thing. You know, the two most important things for any ensemble, I don't care if it's a choir or a full orchestra, you have to play together and you have to play in tune. Everything else is style. That's right. That's a little oversimplification. But so those are the things that I focused on, you know, when I went to the, you know, conducting an ensemble for the first time that I had no experience conducting, you know, just make sure they're together and playing in tune.
Well, you know, I feel like I've seen conductors with such different ways of showing the beat at times where it seems like I'll watch a New York Philharmonic YouTube video and the conductor makes a gesture and the sound seems to happen quite a bit later. Like they're not exactly with him.
Yeah.
And that has to do with learning to anticipate.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, and I do that too. There's a conducting term. It's called the gesture of syncopation, where you give a really strong beat and then the ensemble plays after that.
Yeah.
So it actually works really well with syncopated figures. So that happens too. But the other thing I have to point out too, sometimes you see those YouTube clips, they're out of sync.
They're actually not.
You see visually it looks one way and it sounds totally different just because they're not lined up very well.
So you wouldn't necessarily recommend that a person learn how to conduct watching YouTube.
No, you should never learn how to conduct by conducting a recording. You should definitely, you need a live ensemble. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks for bringing your wealth of experience and your enthusiasm to WMUK and sharing with our listeners this program, Renaissance Fair.
Oh, it's going to be a great concert. The band is more than ready. They're eager to play this concert. I heard from a member just recently that she likes every piece we're playing. Every piece, she's just, you know, can't wait to play. You know, you finish one piece and you pull up the next. She's, I can't wait to play this one. And that's the whole program. And the audience will feel the same way. It's all the music is accessible. It's exciting. It's reflective. It captures moments from the Renaissance time period. It also captures moments that are inspired from the Renaissance that are set in a more of a 20th and 21st century setting.
It's open to everyone, and there's room for everyone in a beautiful Chenery Auditorium.
It is a beautiful space.
Let's finish with some more from the Danserie by Tilman Susato. That's the man who, back in the 1600s or 1500s maybe,
yes, 15.
He 1500. Compiled all these tunes?
He did, yeah. He put together a collection of dance tunes, like 50 dance tunes.
The Danserie.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pretty much all he's known for. But it's great stuff.
It's wonderful. Well, thank you, Dr. Evans.
My pleasure.